This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
You know that moment when a new adventure stops feeling exciting and starts feeling impossible? Frodo and his friends are about to hit that wall hard. In this episode, we dive into the sheer scale of Middle-earth, the crushing weight of their journey, and how Tolkien makes us feel every step of it. And yet there is still hope, even when the enemy is closing in. This is part 4 of our exploration of the chapter A Knife in the Dark from J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring. I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Middle-earth, especially for first-time readers of Tolkien's works. Visit ringspodcast.com to find my free downloadable guides for reading The Silmarillion and other works by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, let's wander. All right, let's set the stage. Our hobbits, Frodo, Sam, Merry, and Pippin, along with Strider, have been on the road for days. They've left Bree, they're heading toward Weathertop, and the weight of their quest is really starting to settle in. This isn't just an adventure anymore. It's dangerous, exhausting, and honestly, it's a little spooky. When they finally reach Weathertop, they find something curious, a pile of stones called a cairn, with a stone that has a strange marking on it, the letter G and the number 3. Strider believes it to be a message from Gandalf that he was here, and he was here on October the 3rd. So you might think, okay, cool, he left a note, moving on. But wait, Tolkien is doing something clever here. This little detail isn't just a signpost, it's a timeline clue. Let's rewind a bit. Earlier in the chapter, before they reach this cairn, the hobbits and Strider see something strange. One night, as they're traveling, they spot flashes of light far off in the distance, somewhere near Weathertop. Now, Strider doesn't immediately explain what they might be, and neither does Tolkien. It's just this little mysterious observation. Something happened out there, but we don't know what. Fast forward a few days, and now they find Gandalf's mark on the stone. And that means Gandalf was ahead of them. And, connecting the dots, the lights they saw days ago, that was him. Maybe fighting, maybe signaling, it's left ambiguous. But now we're piecing together the timeline in real time, just like the characters. That's the beauty of Tolkien's storytelling. He doesn't spoon-feed us, even with the depth of detail he provides. He drops hints, leaves breadcrumbs, and trusts us to put it all together. It's like we, as readers, are part of the adventure, just as in the real world, where we don't always have all the answers at once. Now, if you're anything like me, when I first read this chapter, I was so confused, because they find this stone 3 days after Frodo and Strider saw the lights on the hilltops. I remember thinking as a kid, how did Gandalf know that they would find the stone 3 days later? But that's actually not the case. Gandalf was there on the 3rd day of October, not 3 days before they would find the stone. This is one of those subtle techniques that makes The Lord of the Rings feel so immersive. Tolkien treats time like an actual living thing. He doesn't say, 3 days ago Gandalf fought on Weathertop. Instead, he shows us clues and lets us figure it out ourselves, just like how Frodo and Strider are trying to figure it out in real time. This storytelling technique does a few really cool things. It makes the world feel bigger. Gandalf isn't just appearing when the plot needs him, he has his own journey, happening at the same time as Frodo's. It gives the sense that there's a whole world moving, not just the parts we see. It also builds suspense. Strider and the hobbits don't know what happened on Weathertop yet. We don't know what happened. But the fact that Gandalf had to leave a mark instead of meeting them in person, that's not a good sign. The tension is rising, and it rewards careful reading. Tolkien's fans love dissecting every single detail. That's why we have a podcast, after all. And this is a great example of why. If you're paying attention, you get this aha moment when you realize what the lights meant. Now, this isn't the only time Tolkien uses subtle time clues. He does this all over The Lord of the Rings. A few other examples. The phases of the moon in the book actually line up with the real lunar cycle. Meaning if you track it, you can literally follow the moon's movements just like the characters. And then there's the big one. Time moves differently for the elves, and especially in Lothlorien. But we'll save that discussion for another episode. Tolkien was notoriously detailed with his timeline, and if you want a deeper dive into the timeline of events during the War of the Ring, check out the Tale of Years in Appendix B of The Lord of the Rings. Tolkien's use of time isn't just about keeping track of dates, it's about making Middle-earth feel alive. Now we've just explored how Tolkien subtly weaves time and events together, drawing us into a living, breathing world. But there's another theme in this part of A Knife in the Dark that is just as important: overwhelm. Now, if you've been following along, you've probably noticed how much the world is opening up for our hobbits. The Shire was cozy, Bree was unfamiliar but manageable, but now they are in the wild. And it's starting to sink in just how vast and dangerous Middle-earth really is. Let's talk about this growing sense of overwhelm. There's this line from Merry that really sets the tone. As they stand on Weathertop, he looks around and feels that, quote, "the world looked wild and wide from Weathertop." There's a little bit of medieval alliteration there. And that's exactly the feeling that Tolkien is driving home. This is the first time that the hobbits have seen Middle-earth on this scale. The land stretches endlessly in every direction. There's no safety, no comfort, just open wilderness and distant horizons. It's beautiful, sure, but it's also terrifying. And then, just to drive the point home, Strider gives them a cold reality check. Rivendell is still 2 weeks away. 2 weeks? These hobbits have been walking for days already. Their supplies are running low, and now they're being told that their safest haven is still a fortnight, a full 2 weeks away? That must feel like an eternity. If Merry's reaction gives us the physical sense of the world's vastness, Frodo's reaction gives us the emotional weight of it all. This is the moment where it all really hits him. The adventure he imagined back in Bag End, that's gone. He's not just on a long walk, he's homeless. He's wandering through an unfamiliar world, carrying an unbearable burden, and there's no turning back. And here's where we get an echo of Bilbo's story. Frodo thinks to himself that he wishes he had never left, just like Bilbo did in The Hobbit when things got hard. This is such a brilliant bit of storytelling. Tolkien is reminding us that history repeats itself, both for individuals and for Middle-earth. This longing for home, for the safety and comfort of the place you belong, it's so human, and it makes Frodo's journey feel real. Now, just as Frodo is sinking into this emotional low point, Tolkien does something really clever. He literally darkens the world around him. The text says, quote, "the light was no longer bright." That's such a simple sentence, but wow, does it carry weight. It's not just the sun setting, it's a mood shift. As Frodo's hope fades, so does the light. And then, to make things worse, because of course things can always get worse, two black figures appear on the road below. The Nazgûl. This is masterful pacing. Frodo is already feeling lost, already overwhelmed, already regretting everything. And then, as if to cement those emotions, a literal nightmare appears. The world is too big, the journey is too long, the enemy is too strong. This is overwhelm in its purest form. This moment at Weathertop is such a turning point because it forces the hobbits, and especially Frodo, to fully feel the weight of their journey. There's no more pretending that this is an adventure with a clear path. There's no safety net, just distance, exhaustion, and enemies closing in. This is something that happens in a lot of great fantasy stories. There's always a moment where the heroes realize just how small they are compared to the world around them. In The Hobbit, Bilbo felt it when he first saw the Misty Mountains and asked, "Is that the mountain?" And the dwarves only laugh at him. In Harry Potter, Harry felt it when he first saw how massive Hogwarts was, how mysterious and labyrinth-like were its corridors and dungeons. In Star Wars, Luke felt it when the faraway empire crashed into his quiet life on Tatooine and took away the only family he knew. It's that moment where the adventure stops feeling exhilarating and starts feeling impossible. Haven't we all had those moments, where we step into something new and suddenly realize how much bigger and scarier it is than we expected? But here's the thing, Tolkien isn't just making us feel overwhelmed for the sake of drama. He's setting us up for something important. Because in Middle-earth, overwhelm is not the end of the story. Yes, the world is huge. Yes, the enemy is terrifying and closing in. Yes, the journey is long. But Frodo keeps going. Even when he's exhausted, even when he's afraid, even when he wishes he had never left. That is the heart of the Lord of the Rings. It's not about being fearless. It's not about being ready. It's about moving forward even when the world feels too big. So if you've ever felt overwhelmed, whether by a challenge or a goal, or just life itself, take heart. Because Tolkien is telling us something here. You are not alone in that feeling. And just like Frodo, you can keep going.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
We've explored how Frodo and the Hobbits are beginning to feel the vastness and danger of Middle-earth, the weight of their journey pressing down on them. But now we turn to something just as crucial, what Strider knows about the Black Riders. These shadowy figures have haunted the Hobbits from the moment they left the Shire, and even before. We know they're dangerous, but what are they? What are their abilities? How do they sense their prey? And most importantly, how can they be stopped, if at all? Strider gives us answers, but those answers are just as unsettling as they are enlightening. It's Mary who asks the key question here. Can the Black Riders see? Now, I think it's interesting that Mary is the one who asked the question. His interactions with the Black Riders have been different from Frodo's and the others up to this point. He wasn't on the road when the Riders first appeared in the Shire. But back in an earlier chapter, he did see something strange. Back at the ferry dock in the Shire, Mary saw a black bundle swaying near the ground. It wasn't moving like a normal person, but creeping along the ground. Mary may not have encountered them up close like Frodo has, but he has felt their power. In Bree, he was the one who experienced the black breath, that cold, paralyzing terror that seeped into his very being, leaving him unconscious. This is important because it shows us another side of the rider's abilities. They don't just attack physically. They break down their victims mentally and spiritually. Tolkien is slowly revealing the full danger of these creatures. They are not just menacing figures on horseback. They corrupt the world around them. They weaken the will of those they encounter. Their power is beyond the physical. One of the most chilling things Strider tells us is that the Black Riders are drawn to the ring. This explains so much. Their movements, their pauses, the way they seem to be hunting the hobbits without needing to see them directly. It all comes down to the ring's presence. The closer Frodo gets to wearing it, the closer they get to finding him. And this is where Frodo's despair deepens. He is carrying something that actively calls the enemy toward him. He is already overwhelmed by the sheer scale of the journey, but now he realizes something far worse. No matter how far they run, no matter how well they hide, the riders will always be able to sense them, because the ring wants to be found. It calls to them. Up until now, the riders have been terrifying, but there's still a sense that if they just escaped far enough, they might be safe. Strider's words shatter that illusion. But here's where we get something that defines Strider as a character. Because just as Frodo begins to despair, Strider offers a simple but powerful reassurance. Quote, "There is still hope. You are not alone." This is a major theme for Strider in the story. He is a warrior, yes, A guide? Yes. A future king? Yes. But above all, he is a bearer of hope. Tolkien often writes about hope as something that exists even in the darkest moments. It's not naive optimism. It's not certainty. It's the belief that no matter how grim things seem, no matter how overwhelming the odds, there is always a path forward. And that's what Strider gives to Frodo in this moment. He doesn't sugarcoat the danger. He doesn't pretend that the road ahead is easy. But he reminds Frodo, and you and I as readers, that despair is not the answer. Hope is one of the central themes of The Lord of the Rings, and Strider embodies it more than almost any other character. But Tolkien's view of hope is not the same as simple reassurance. In Middle-earth, hope isn't about merely expecting things to go well. It's about moving forward, even when you have no reason to believe that you will succeed. You take the step forward. Think about all these moments in Tolkien's stories where hope seems lost. When Sam and Frodo are on the slopes of Mount Doom, starving and exhausted and nearly defeated. When Théoden rides to what seems like certain death at the Battle of Pelennor Fields. When Aragorn leads a hopeless charge against the Black Gate, knowing they cannot win, but knowing that they must try anyway. In each of these moments, hope is not about certainty. It's about courage. It's about refusing to give in to the darkness. And that's what Strider is doing here. He's telling Frodo, yes, the enemy is strong. Yes, the road is long. Yes, the burden is heavy. Yes, the enemy can track you. But you are not alone. And as long as you do not give up, there is still hope. This moment is crucial because it sets up what's coming next. The Black Riders are not just a distant threat anymore. They are closing in, and Frodo, for all his fears, is going to have to face them head on. But as we move forward in this chapter, one thing will remain true. Hope is still alive. No matter how overwhelming the world feels, no matter how strong the enemy appears, no matter how impossible the journey seems, there is still hope, and you are not alone. Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, visit ringspodcast.com/member. If you found today's Wandering of Middle-earth to be inspiring, please share this episode with a friend. Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, I am most active on Threads. Find a link to my profile at ringspodcast.com and tap the at symbol near the top. And thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.